Welcome to another weekly edition of Radioactive Magazine with this week's host, Dave Mitchell. This week, we will be examining President Obama's signature health care legislation, the Affordable Care Act, and the consequences of a repeal of this act. The incoming administration and Republican Congress have the ACA in their crosshairs with no clear replacement alternative. We have with us today Representative Deb Lavender, who is a Democrat representing District 90 from Kirkwood, Missouri, in the St. Louis metro area. Representative Lavender is a graduate of Marquette University and has lived in the St. Louis area the last 30 years. She is a noted leader in the field of physical therapy, owning her own clinic in Kirkwood. She has been a member of the Missouri legislature since 2014 and has been involved with a task force for examining statewide Medicaid delivery models. Representative Lavender, welcome to Radioactive Magazine.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you today.
Okay, well, thank you. And welcome. The Affordable Care Act has been demonized by many on the political right, but has in reality had a very positive social benefit. Since its passage in 2010, the percentage of uninsured Americans has gone from 16% in 2010 to 8.9% in the January through June 2016 period, according to the National Health Interview Survey on CDC.gov. In March 2016, the Congressional Budget Office reported 23 million have insurance due to the Affordable Care Act, with 12 million directly through the Affordable Care Act insurance and an additional 11 million through expanded Medicaid. The Kaiser Foundation reported that in the period 2000 to 2005, healthcare premiums increased 69%. That was prior to the ACA passage in 2010. In the five-year period 2010 to 2015, healthcare premiums increased only 27% and only 3% from 2015 to 2016. In addition to improving the quality of life for millions of Americans, the ACA has had a society-wide impact in reducing the rate of growth in healthcare premiums. Let's review the basic features of the Affordable Care Act, which address some serious abuses within the private healthcare industry. Representative Lavender, what features do you feel are fundamental to the Affordable Care Act?
Well, Dave, if I can, first let me thank you for having that data and details where this program has been demonized significantly over the years. Mm-hmm. There are significant numbers of people that have been affected to the good because of the Affordable Care Act. And the statistics that you just gave us are impressive. Here in Missouri specifically, we had 13.2% people uninsured in 2010, and we're down to 9.8%. And that is inside of, we still have not expanded Medicaid expansion here in Missouri. So our numbers could have been better, but they're also still down substantially just with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. The features that we all know and love that our Republican colleagues continue to say, well, we're not going to change that, is people with pre-existing issues are no longer denied insurance. And for me, where that really makes a difference is children who were born preemie, truly, who may have then had medical issues, would have been denied coverage on their parents' insurance because they had a pre-existing issue. And so when I'd heard stories of that, that just smacked of phenomenal injustice in our healthcare industry on who we were denying for having pre-existing issues. There is no longer a lifetime cap. People used to brag about, oh, I have a lifetime cap of $2 million or $3 million. One significant health incident will get you to that cap in a pretty quick amount of time. The other aspect is we know 26-year-olds can stay on their parents' insurance. Children, young adults up until 26 years of age can stay on their parents' coverage. And quite often we know that's when kids are still in school or just getting out and looking for hopefully what their career or lifelong jobs are going to be and don't always have access to health care at that time. So those are some of the significant features that the Affordable Care Act has given us that we all think will stay in place, because too many Americans have now gotten used to that idea and feel that that should be a mainstay of whatever we have.
Well, yeah, that was, I know that, you know, prior to the Affordable Care Act passing, endless stories about people losing their health insurance because of pre-existing conditions, or when they became ill, their insurance was terminated.
Yes.
You know, the as I indicated, the healthcare premiums were skyrocketing from 2000 to 2005. And
thanks for having that, too. That's something that we seem to forget. Mm-hmm. I was certainly aware of premiums going up 10, 15, 20% per year.
Uh-huh.
You'll remember that we all used to have deductibles of $250 or $500. That's when mm-hmm. people suddenly went up to deductibles of $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 mm-hmm. in order to reduce their premiums.
And that
you have companies that have offered a different structure in having a high deductible rate for their company to get better premiums, mm-hmm. but then the company pays for some of that high deductible mm-hmm. that they know in the long run that works for them. All of those processes and measures started to happen long before the Affordable Care Act, and that was because of the skyrocketing cost of increased premiums.
Right. The whole system was under stress. So how do you think the Affordable Care Act, how has it brought the system under control, this sort of spiraling, out-of-control cost situation? How has it done that?
I'm not sure I know enough of the mechanisms to answer this question real accurately. I do believe part of how we've been able to control the structure better is having more people enrolled in the healthcare process.
Mm-hmm.
By having the mandates that everybody needs insurance, the way insurance works, whether it's auto insurance, homeowners insurance, or health insurance, is not all of us have a need for that insurance at the same time. If the only people you cover in your health insurance are people who are sick, and you know they're going to be going to the physician, you know they're going to have payouts, you're going to have high cost. When you have those of us who are healthy and don't have the same demands of the healthcare industry, that's how you have a pool of people that allow us to take the risk or to be able to provide the insurance for the people who need it. And I think by increasing the pools of people covered, that we've been able to have more sustainable costs.
Well, and I'm sure that that all the insurance reimbursements for people who started having health care would have had to have some positive benefit on the entire system. And
absolutely.
You know, I think so basically, as far as the individual mandate goes, I know the individual mandate was very unpopular among many, particularly the political right. But that is a, as you said, it's a fundamental requirement of the ACA and Affordable Care Act in order for the whole thing to work.
Well, and that's fascinating, of course, because it's personal accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So personal accountability should be that you carry health insurance. And my Republican colleagues will speak on a daily occurrence on the House floor and talk about personal accountability, personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. People need to take ownership of their issues and what's around them. So how we don't feel that participation in health insurance is not a personal responsibility escapes me.
Mm-hmm.
We know if I'm uninsured and I fall down and I'm involved in an auto accident or something along those lines, it places me in a serious situation from a health point of view, that healthcare providers are demanded to provide me care. And there's a cost in that. If I'm uninsured and I don't carry my own health insurance, then that cost reverts back to the state, which reverts back to our taxpayers. So now we are using taxpayer dollars for people who are uninsured. And so for me, it's a personal responsibility issue, whether you feel you are healthy or not. We never can predict when an accident's going to occur and health costs are suddenly imposed upon us. So in order to have that covered and not be a drain on state resources, you should be required to have health insurance.
Well, and you know, the other point is really that the Affordable Care Act, it addressed some significant abuses in the private healthcare sector as far as insurance goes, and it also there's also a great deal of humanity in enabling the poorest and the most vulnerable among us to be able to afford to be able to have access to healthcare insurance without being socked with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt that they cannot pay.
Absolutely. And states that have expanded Medicaid for their people living under the 300% of poverty find that as they get healthier, and have access to better healthcare, they are more reliably employed. They don't need to be missing work for physician's appointments, which quite often can interfere and interrupt with a job. And so it creates a much more stable workforce, a healthier population, and that's good for all of us economically.
Right, right. My understanding as the ACA provides subsidies to people that if I remember correctly, is they can qualify for a subsidy if they are within 100 to 400% of federal poverty level. Is that correct?
I think it's 133% of poverty to 400%.
Okay.
And then, unfortunately, what happens in Missouri is our Medicaid program in Missouri covers you up to 18% of poverty. So
low?
Yes, yes. Missouri is not generous with coverage for Medicaid for our poverty population.
Boy, that's extremely poor.
Yes.
And
that's where you hear of this gap in coverage. So if you are at 18% of poverty level in Missouri, you qualify for health care unless you're a single individual with no children. And so that creates a whole nother arena of issues. You're a 45-year-old individual. You've been gainfully employed your entire life. You suddenly run into a tremendous disabling injury, diagnosis, disease, and you no longer can work. You really have no access to health care, and the state doesn't provide it for you either. So that's a whole nother aside. But the gap between 18% and 133% is people who don't qualify for subsidies. So the federal government offers subsidies from people from 133 to 400% of poverty, and that's where people have help in paying their premiums. But in Missouri, it's the people from 18% to 133% that don't have help in paying their premiums and essentially then don't have insurance. And that's what you'll call or hear of being called the gap. If Missouri had expanded Medicaid, people up to 133% of poverty would be covered.
Yeah, and there's no way that you would be able to afford any kind of health insurance premium from 19% of poverty level up to 133. There's no way you could do it.
Right,
So they're just locked out. Can you talk a little bit about your work on the task force for examining statewide Medicaid delivery models?
Yes, we had a task force that we put together last year. Now, healthcare delivery was through a managed care program. And it was looking at how we would give people on Medicaid the delivery system of healthcare through managed care. Managed care in older days, people might be familiar with the HMO concept, Health Maintenance Organization. And so you had a set of physicians that you could go to for your care. It was just a delivery system that we thought was beneficial to help control costs. Unfortunately, those of us who have private insurance, whether it's our employers, insurance, whether we own our own company, and choose our health care. Most of us have moved beyond having the health maintenance organization, HMO, or managed care providers, in that we feel we have better choices by not being locked into that system. So where managed care provides some benefits, we also feel that people having access to physicians that they want to go to offers greater freedom and accountability of healthcare also.
What do you think the possibilities are of Missouri making a movement on increasing the eligibility of the poor to have Medicaid? And do you see any movement at all in that area?
I'm encouraged in some arenas. Happened to meet with the Organization of Corn Growers over this past summer. And one of the top priorities that they have through the legislation session was how they provide and have access to health care for their members in rural areas of Missouri. And so we are losing health clinics in rural areas. Unfortunately, some hospitals have been closing in our state because we haven't expanded Medicaid, and that's kind of a separate topic itself. But many Missourians are losing access to health care. And so if we can start working with some of the organizations that deal with our rural communities, we may find that we are able to increase access. One of the concerns that I have in general, so right now one of our headlines has been is that our state budget is in trouble by close to between $200 and $350 million, which is a significant amount of money. I'm concerned that my Republican colleagues are painting it as our Medicaid population is a drain on our budget. And another way of looking at this is over the last many years, the legislature has given tax breaks to our wealthy organizations, corporations, and that has resulted in a loss of revenue of this $200 to $350 million. One simple example of that is we used to have a franchise tax for corporations. I own a small physical therapy practice. Every other year, I needed to pay $49 as franchise tax to register and have my corporation be viable in our state. I don't have to pay that anymore. That's one of the tax breaks that we've given to corporations. Now, being a small business, mine was $49 every other year. I would imagine the larger company that you had, probably that cost more money. Mm-hmm. But I would gladly pay $49 every other year to plug this hole in our budget of right. $200 to $350 million.
Right.
So I'm slightly pessimistic we're going to expand Medicaid poverty level, because we're using our Medicaid expenses as an excuse for why our budget's not being balanced.
As a whipping boy, yeah. There was an article in the Huffington Post yesterday, and it was entitled, Doctor's Orders, Don't Repeal Obamacare Until You Have a Plan to Replace It. And that article indicated that the American Medical Association sent an open letter to congressional leaders with the message, don't mess with Obamacare until you know the replacement. And then the second message was, don't do anything to backtrack on the law's most important accomplishment, which was bringing the uninsured rate to a historic low. Also, there was another article on the same date, also in the Huffington Post, talking about how Obama urges Democrats to stand tall against assault on Obamacare. And it was noted in that article that since the ACA was enacted, the Republicans have failed to come up with a replacement. And its repeal would lead to 30 million people losing their health insurance.
Right.
If the Affordable Care Act was repealed, just from an economic perspective, what effect do you think that would have on the healthcare system?
Well, at this moment, I think it could be devastating. And I think that's why there's significant uncertainty in what's going to go on. If we repealed the Affordable Care Act, you no longer have these provisions that we know everybody's happy with, pre-existing issues, no lifetime caps, you know, stay on coverage until you're 26. But we would also remove the healthcare exchanges where people sign up for insurance and get some subsidies to help pay for those premiums. So that would be gone. And let's just say January 23rd, Congress passes and the new president signs a repeal of that. You would, as you've just said, have those 23 million people no longer have access to health care. You have jobs that have been created to serve those additional 23 million people who have health care. So you would lose those jobs overnight. You would lose the economic engine that this has provided to our nation. So the subsidies that are helping people have health care, the jobs that it's produced, the person who has that job who goes downtown to Target and shops, or shops at a Schnucks or a Dierbergs or a local vendor on Main Street, you suddenly take all of that money out of the healthcare process, which has fueled the economy across our country.
Well, and you also take away all those insurance reimbursements for all the healthcare people have been receiving to the healthcare system itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenal tumble effect, right? You pull out a significant piece at the bottom of this huge pyramid, and it will all fall down.
Well, and then the other issue is just the inhumanity following through with this. I mean, I know the Republicans look at the cost and everything, but from everything I can see, it looks to me as if the ACA is a social benefit in a number of ways, economically, financially included. And outside of that is just a humane issue of our society making the decision through the ACA to take care of those people who in our society who are the poorest and the most vulnerable and lack insurance. And
I think so.
And having health insurance, particularly if you're in certain categories, is extremely important and vital.
Well, we still, and a statistic we haven't brought up yet, is we have, I think we know 7 to 10 people die a week in the state of Missouri because of lack of health care. And these are people who perhaps have diabetes, perhaps have high blood pressure that they may or may not know about, but they have truly zero access to health care to control these issues. And we know statistically people die close to every day in Missouri because they don't have health insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I went over to the Senate a year ago when they were debating some of this. And Senator Kirk Schaefer was speaking to another senator on the floor and talking about the budget implications of expanding Medicaid. And his comment was, well, we think there are 300,000 people in Missouri that are insured, that are not insured, that would benefit from us doing this. But heaven forbid, other states have had people come out of the woodwork. It might be 400,000 people that we would have to. And they were talking about it as a budgetary item. And I couldn't help but feel that they had no relationship to that was 400,000 Missourians that may not have health insurance who suffer the consequences of that on a regular basis. It was very disheartening to me to hear it talked about from a budget point of view and not a personal point of view.
Well, that's a sobering statement. Representative Lavender, we are running out of time here, and I'll just close with a quote from Senator Schumer of the new Democratic leader in the Senate, saying that Republicans would create chaos in the healthcare system because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, referring to repeal of the ACA. They have no idea what to put in place of the Affordable Care Act. And he did coin the phrase, repeal the ACA would make America sick again. So, and I think there's it would make a significant percentage of Americans sick again. So thank you very much for being on the show today. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your asking and giving me the opportunity to talk about this incredibly important aspect and the confusion that we're all going to have for a while until we know what the Republicans in Washington, D.C. are going to do.
Well, I think it's very important that people just stand up and express their views that they want.
Yes.
That they need certain things in place.
And yes, I agree.
Okay.
Calling our congressional members and our state legislator members is an important way to exercise our rights as citizens and help our elected officials know how to chart the path of the future for our state and nation.
Again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, you too.
And you are listening to Radioactive Magazine.
Okay, we're interviewing Andrea Flinders from American Federation of Teachers, Local 691. And I'm just going to ask you an open-ended question, Andrea. You have an event coming up. Tell us what the event is, why the event, where the event, and any other question that maybe people might want to know about.
All right, yeah, we are, and it's January 19th. It is from 4 to 7, and it is at Paseo High School at 4747 Flora. It's going to be kind of an open house event where people can just stop in. And I think the reason that we wanted our local involved in this is actually a national event that AFT is sponsoring, and we wanted to be part of it because we need to remind people just how important public education is. And I think with the current legislative election and the atmosphere, I said, you know, sometimes people forget just how important public education is for our students.
I understand it's a community event and you're going to invite other organizations.
Yes, we're inviting other community people that support education. We don't have all the details worked out yet, but we do have, we're going to have tables and people will be able to pass out literature and talk about why they support public education in Kansas City.
So it sounds like a good networking environment.
And I think so, yes. It should be a lot of fun. We're hoping to have some students do some presentations and do some flyers and things like that and just kind of showcase some of the things that our kids are doing in the district.
All right. So come out and show your support for education. And one more time, where and when?
It is at Paseo High School, 4747 Flora. January 19th from 4 to 7.
Okay, those were KKFI's that was just down the street.
Yep.
Thank you very much for being on Radioactive Magazine, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.